The front door was open, and the glass porch behind him, full of shoes and coats, was blinding in the bright Saturday morning sun, turning Simon into a silhouette. His shadow rippled up the stairs, just touching the one on which Andrew stood. "Into town with Fats. Homework all finished, is it?" "Yeah." It was a lie, but Simon would not bother to check.
"Ruth? Ruth!"
She appeared at the kitchen door, wearing an apron, flushed, with her hands covered in flour. "What?"
"Do we need anything from town?"
"What? No, I don't think so."
"Taking my bike, are you?"
demanded Simon of Andrew.
"Yeah, I was going to."
"Leaving it at Fat's house?"
"Yeah."
"What time do we want him back?"
Simon asked, turning to Ruth again.
"Oh, I don't know, Si," said Ruth impatiently.
The furthest she ever went in irritation with her husband was on occasions when Simon, though basically in a good mood, started laying down the law for the fun of it. Andrew and Fats often went into town together, on the vague understanding that Andrew would return before it became dark.
5 o'clock, then, said Simon, arbitrarily. Any later and you're grounded.
Fine, Andrew replied. He kept his right hand in his jacket pocket, clenched over a tightly folded wad of paper, intensely aware of it, like a ticking grenade. The fear of losing this piece of paper, on which was inscribed a line of meticulously written code and a number of crossed-out, reworked and heavily edited sentences, had been plaguing him for a week. He had been keeping it on him at all times and sleeping with it inside his pillowcase. Simon barely moved aside, so that Andrew had to edge past him into the porch, his fingers clamped over the paper. He was terrified that Simon would demand that he turn out his pockets, ostensibly looking for cigarettes.
"Bye, then."
Simon did not answer. Andrew proceeded into the garage, where he took out the note, unfolded it, and read it. He knew that he was being irrational, that mere proximity to Simon could not have magically switched the papers, but still he made sure. Satisfied that all was safe, he refolded it, tucked it deeper into his pocket, which fastened with a stud, then wheeled the racing bike out of the garage and down through the gate into the lane. He could tell that his father was watching him through the glass door of the porch, hoping, Andrew was sure, to see him fall off or mistreat the bicycle in some way. Pagford lay below Andrew, slightly hazy in the cool spring sun, the air fresh and tangy. Andrew sensed the point at which Simon's eyes could no longer follow him. It felt as though pressure had been removed from his back. Down the hill into Pagford he streaked, not touching the brakes. Then he turned into Church Row. Approximately halfway along the street he slowed down and cycled decorously into the drive of the Walls' house, taking care to avoid Cubby's car. "Hello, Andy," said Tessa, opening the front door to him.
"Hi, Mrs. Wall."
Andrew accepted the convention that Fats's parents were laughable. Tessa was plump and plain, her hairstyle was odd and her dress sense embarrassing, while Cubby was comically uptight. Yet Andrew could not help but suspect that if the Walls had been his parents, he might have been tempted to like them. They were so civilized, so courteous. He never had the feeling in their house that the floor might suddenly give way and plunge you into chaos. Fats was sitting on the bottom stair, putting on his trainers. A packet of loose tobacco was clearly visible, peeking out of the breast pocket of his jacket.
"Arf. Fats.
Do you want to leave your father's bicycle in the garage, Andy?"
"Yeah, thanks, Mrs. Wall."
She always, he reflected, said, "your father," never, "your dad." Andrew knew that Tessa detested Simon. It was one of the things that made him pleased to overlook the horrible shapeless clothes she wore and the unflattering blunt-cut fringe. Her antipathy dated from that horrific, epoch-making occasion years and years before when a 6-year-old Fats had come to spend Saturday afternoon at Hilltop House for the first time. Balancing precariously on top of a box in the garage, trying to retrieve a couple of old badminton rackets, the two boys had accidentally knocked down the contents of a rickety shelf. Andrew remembered the tin of creosote falling, smashing onto the roof of the car and bursting open, and the terror that had engulfed him, and his inability to communicate to his giggling friend what they had brought upon themselves. Simon had heard the crash. He ran out to the garage and advanced on them with his jaw jutting, making his low, moaning animal noise, before starting to roar threats of dire physical punishment, his fists clenched inches from their small, upturned faces. Fats had wet himself. A stream of urine had splattered down the inside of his shorts onto the garage floor. Ruth, who had heard the yelling from the kitchen, had run from the house to intervene.
"No, Si, no, it was an accident."
Fats was white and shaking. He wanted to go home straight away. He wanted his mum. Tessa had arrived, and Fats had run to her in his soaking shorts, sobbing. It was the only time in his life that Andrew had seen his father at a loss, backing down. Somehow, Tessa had conveyed white-hot fury without raising her voice, without threatening, without hitting. She had written out a check and forced it into Simon's hand, while Ruth said,
No, there's no need, there's no need.
Simon had followed her to her car, trying to laugh it all off, but Tessa had given him a look of contempt while loading the still sobbing Fats into the passenger seat and slammed the driver's door in Simon's smiling face. Andrew had seen his parents' expressions. Tessa was taking away with her, down the hill into the town, something that usually remained hidden in the house on top of the hill. Fats courted Simon these days. Whenever he came up to Hilltop House, he went out of his way to make Simon laugh, and in return, Simon welcomed Fats's visits, enjoyed his crudest jokes, liked hearing about his antics. Still, when alone with Andrew, Fats concurred wholeheartedly that Simon was a grade A, 24-carat cunt. "I reckon she's a leser," said Fats, as they walked past the old vicarage, dark in the shadow of the Scots pine, with ivy covering its front. "Your mum?" asked Andrew, barely listening, lost in his own thoughts. "What?" yelped Fats, and Andrew saw that he was genuinely outraged. "Fuck off! Supvinda Jawanda!" "Oh, yeah, right!" Andrew laughed, and so, a beat later, did Fats. The bus into Yarville was crowded. Andrew and Fats had to sit next to each other rather than in two double seats, as they preferred. As they passed the end of Hope Street, Andrew glanced along it, but it was deserted. He had not run into Gaia outside school since the afternoon when they had both secured Saturday jobs at the Copper Kettle. The cafe would open the following weekend. He experienced waves of euphoria every time he thought of it. "SciPy's election campaign on track, is it?" asked Fats, busy making roll-ups. One long leg was stuck out at an angle into the aisle of the bus. People were stepping over it rather than asking him to move. "Cubby's cacking it already, and he's only making his pamphlet." "Yeah, he's busy," said Andrew, and he bore without flinching a silent eruption of panic in the pit of his stomach. He thought of his parents at the kitchen table, as they had been nightly for the past week, of a box of stupid pamphlets that Simon had printed at work, of the list of talking points Ruth had helped Simon compile, which he used as he made telephone calls every evening to every person he knew within the electoral boundary. Simon did all of it with an air of immense effort. He was tightly wound at home, displaying heightened aggression towards his sons. He might have been shouldering a burden that they had shirked. The only topic of conversation at meals was the election, with Simon and Ruth speculating about the forces ranged against Simon. They took it very personally that other candidates were standing for Barry Fairbrother's old seat, and seemed to assume that Colin Wall and Miles Morrison spent most of their time plotting together, staring up at Hilltop House, focused entirely on defeating the man who had lived there. Andrew checked his pocket again for the folded paper. He had not told Fats what he intended to do. He was afraid that Fats might broadcast it. Andrew was not sure how to impress upon his friend the necessity for absolute secrecy, how to remind Fats that the maniac who had made little boys piss themselves was alive and well and living in Andrew's house. "Cubby's not too worried about SciPy," said Fats,
He thinks the big competition is Miles Mollison.
Yeah, said Andrew. He had heard his parents discussing it. Both of them seemed to think that Shirley had betrayed them, that she ought to have forbidden her son from challenging Simon.
This is a holy...